Chapter 9. Pitt was fighting fatigue when Ice Hunter sailed off the radar screen and loomed over the starboard bow. After searching the rest of the Polar Queen for other survivors, a lost cause as it turned out, he only allowed himself a short catnap while Deirdre Dorset stood watch, ready to wake him lest the ship run down some poor trawler fishing for icewater cod. There are those who feel refreshed after a brief rest. Not Pitt. 20 minutes in dreamland was not enough to reconstitute his mind and body after 24 hours of stress and fatigue. He felt worse than when he lay down. He was getting too old to jump out of helicopters and battle raging seas, he mused. When he was 20, he felt strong enough to leap over tall buildings with a single bound. At 30, maybe a couple of one-story houses. How far back was that? Considering his sore muscles and aching joints, he was sure it must be 80 or 90 years ago. He'd been working too long for the National Underwater and Marine Agency and Admiral Sandecker. It was time for a career move, something not as rigorous, with shorter hours. Maybe weaving hats out of palm fronds on a Tahiti beach, or something that stimulated the mind, like being a door-to-door contraceptive salesman. He shook off the silly thoughts brought on by weariness and set the automated control system to all stop. A quick radio transmission to Dempsey on board Ice Hunter, informing him that Pitt was closing down the engines and requesting a crew to come aboard and take over the cruise ship's operation, and then he picked up the phone and called Admiral Sandecker over a satellite link to give him an update on the situation. The receptionist at NUMA headquarters put him straight through on Sandecker's private line. Though they were a third of the globe apart, Pitt's time zone in the Antarctic was only 1 hour ahead of Sandecker's in Washington, D.C.
"Good evening, Admiral."
"About time I heard from you. Well, things have been hectic. I had to get the story second-hand from Dempsey on how you and Giordino found and saved the cruise ship. I'll be happy to fill you in with the details." "Have you rendezvoused with Ice Hunter?"
Sandecker was short on greetings.
"Yes, sir. Captain Dempsey is only a few hundred meters off my starboard beam. He's sending a boat across to put a salvage crew on board and take off the only survivor."
"How many casualties?" asked Sandecker.
"After a preliminary search of the ship," answered Pitt, "I've accounted for all but 5 of the crew. Using a passenger list from the purser's office and a roster of the crew in the first officer's quarters, we're left with 20 passengers and 2 of the crew still among the living, out of a total of 202.
"That tallies to 180 dead,
as near as I can figure.
Since it is their ship, the Australian government is launching a massive investigation into the tragedy. A British research station with an airfield is situated not far to the southwest of your position at Dewes Bay. I've ordered Captain Dempsey to proceed there and transport the survivors ashore. The cruise line owners, Ruppert and Saunders, have chartered a Qantas jetliner to fly them to Sydney."
"What about the bodies of the dead passengers and crew?"
"They'll be packed in ice at the research station and flown to Australia on a military transport. Soon as they arrive, official investigators will launch a formal inquiry into the tragedy while pathologists conduct post-mortem examinations on the bodies."
"Speaking of Polar Queen," said Pitt.
He gave the Admiral the particulars of its discovery by him and Giordino and the near brush with calamity in the ferocious breakers around the base of the Danger Islands. At the end, he asked, "What do we do with her?" "Ruppert and Saunders are also sending a crew to sail her back to Adelaide, accompanied by a team of Australian government investigators who will examine her from funnel to keel before she reaches port."
"You should demand an open contract form for salvage.
NUMA could be awarded as much as $20 million for saving the ship from certain disaster."
"Entitled to or not, we'll not charge one thin dime for saving their ship."
Pitt detected the silky tone of satisfaction in Sandecker's voice. "I'll get twice that sum in favors and cooperation from the Aussie government for future research projects in and around their waters."
No one could ever accuse the Admiral of being senile.
"Niccolo Machiavelli could have taken lessons from you," Pitt sighed.
You might be interested in learning that dead marine life in your area has tapered off. Fishermen and research station support vessels have reported finding no unusual fish or mammal kills in the past 48 hours. Whatever the killer is, it has moved on. Now we're beginning to hear of massive amounts of fish and unusually high numbers of sea turtles being washed up on beaches around the Fiji Islands.
Sounds suspiciously like the plague has a life of its own.
It doesn't stay in one place, said Sandecker grimly. The stakes are high. Unless our scientists can systematically eliminate the possible causes and home in on the one responsible damned quick, we're going to see a loss of sea life that can't be replenished. Not in our lifetime.
At least we can take comfort in knowing it's not a repeat of the explosive reproduction by the red tide from chemical pollution out of the Niger River.
Certainly not since we shut down that hazardous waste plant in Mali that was the cause, added Sandecker. Our monitors up and down the river have shown no further indications of the altered synthetic amino acid and cobalt that created the problem.
Do our lab geniuses have any suspects on this one? Inquired Pitt.
Not on this end, replied Sandecker. We were hoping the biologists on board Ice Hunter might have come up with something.
If they have, they're keeping it a secret from me.
Do you have any notions on the subject? Asked Sandecker.
There was a careful, almost cautious probing in his voice.
Something juicy that I can give the hounds from the news media who are parked in our lobby nearly 200 strong?
A shadow of a smile touched Pitt's eyes.
There was a private understanding between them that nothing of importance was ever discussed over a satellite phone. Calls that went through the atmosphere were as vulnerable to eavesdropping as an old farm belt party line. The mere mention of the news media meant that Pitt was to dodge the issue.
They're drooling for a good story, are they?
The tabloids are already touting a ship of the dead from the Antarctic Triangle.
Are you serious?
I'll be happy to fax you the stories.
I'm afraid they'll be disappointed by my hypothesis.
Care to share it with me?
There was a pause.
I think it might be an unknown virus that is carried by air currents.
A virus, Sandecker repeated mechanically.
Not very original, I must say.
I realize it has a queer sound to it, said Pitt.
About as logical as counting the holes in an acoustical ceiling when you're in the dentist's chair.
If Sandecker was puzzled by Pitt's nonsensical ramblings, he didn't act it. He merely sighed in resignation as if he was used to chatter.
I think we'd better leave the investigation to the scientists. They appear to have a better grip on the situation than you do.
Forgive me, Admiral, I'm not thinking straight.
You sound like a man wandering in a fog. As soon as Dempsey sends a crew on board, you head for Ice Hunter and get some sleep.
Thank you for being so understanding.
Simply a matter of appreciating the situation. We'll speak later.
A click and Admiral Sandecker was gone.
Deirdre Dorset went out onto the bridge wing and waved wildly as she recognized Maeve Fletcher standing at the railing of Ice Hunter. Suddenly free of the torment of being the only person alive on a ship filled with cadavers, she laughed in sheer unaffected exhilaration, her voice ringing across the narrowing breach between the two ships.
"Maeve!"
she cried.
Maeve stared across the water, searching the decks of the cruise ship for the female calling her name. Then her eyes locked on the figure standing on the bridge wing, waving. For half a minute she stared, bewildered. Then, as she recognized Deirdre, her face took on the expression of someone walking in a graveyard at night who was suddenly tapped on the shoulder.
"Deirdre?"
she shouted the name questioningly.
"Is that any way to greet someone close who's returned from the dead? You? Here, alive? Oh, Maeve, you can't know how happy I am to see you alive."
"I'm shocked to see you, too," said Maeve, slowly taking rein of her senses.
"Were you injured while ashore?" Deirdre asked, as if concerned. "A mild case of frostbite, nothing more."
Maeve gestured to the Ice Hunter crewmen who were lowering a launch.
"I'll hitch a ride and meet you at the foot of the gangway." "I'll be waiting."
Deirdre smiled to herself and stepped back into the wheelhouse, where Pitt was talking over the radio to Dempsey. He nodded and smiled at her before signing off. "Dempsey tells me Maeve is on her way over." Deirdre nodded.
"She was surprised to see me."
"A fortunate coincidence," said Pitt, noting for the first time that Deirdre was nearly as tall as he. "The two friends are the only members of the crew still alive." Deirdre shrugged.
"We're hardly what you'd call friends."
He stared curiously into brown eyes that glinted from the sun's rays that shone through the forward window. "You dislike each other?"
"A matter of bad blood, Mr. Pitt," she said matter-of-factly. "You see, despite our different surnames, Maeve Fletcher and I are sisters.